From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 12th day of June, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, we'll take up the livestock sector and the problems it's encountered. I know we've discussed the hog sector a lot in the last couple of weeks. We'll take up dairy today. Mike Hutchins, extension specialist from the OBI, will be with us. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby wheat futures, July contract a dime lower at $5.84¾. September at $6.13¼, down 10 cents. December futures in the wheat at $6.40¼ for the soft red, down 9½ cents. From Kansas City, hard red winter wheat, July contract, the harvest month, 7½ lower at $6.37 a bushel. From the corn pit back in Chicago, lead option July settled 15½ cents lower at $4.25½. September at $4.34½, down 15½. And December contracted $4.47¾. The harvest month corn down 15½ cents for the December. March futures 14¾ lower at $4.59½. And the May corn at $4.67 for the 2010 year, down 14¾ cents. July soybean futures, 12.45½, down 21½. August down 14¼ at 11.71¼. And September at $11.08, down 16¼. November beans, 10.76½, down 13¼. January futures, $10.83, 13 cents lower in the March 2010 contract in the bean pit at 10.79½, down 13¼ as well. July soybean meal at 4.2270, down 5.30. August down 4.30 at 3.85.70. July oil, 37.16, 104 lower. August down 103 at 37.33. June lean, or live cattle rather, at 80.47½. Up 37½ cents. The August at 15 higher at 81.60. August feeders at 97.57½, up $1.20. And the June lean hog futures, $57.02½, up 2½ cents on the afternoon for a Friday. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures settled the day at $72.04 a barrel in the nearby July contract, down 64 cents. August, 73 lower at 72.75. July ethanol, $1.76¼, down a penny and 7 tenths. Natural gas at 3.87¼ for the lead option, down 5¾. The RBOB at 204¼, 2¼ lower. And July heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.83½. Down 1¼ on its last trade. July propane futures at 89½ cents are up 1⅙ cents. And the gold at $940.10 settled $21.20 lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently trading at 87.94 is just about 23 points higher on the day. And the U.S. dollar at 80.13 is up 0.72 for the afternoon. The CRB index at this hour, 262.55, is down 3.62. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, according to our own Daniel Pounder. He says tonight in Illinois should be mostly cloudy. A chance of showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. That'll happen especially late. In Indiana, mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 53 in the north to 65 in the south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. Tomorrow, highs will range from 68 near Chicago's lakefront to 85 in the south. The extended forecast, very typical June weather pattern in store for the Midwest, which is ruled by temperatures in the upper 70s and the 80s, and almost a day-to-day chance for a shower or thunderstorm. Over the next 8 to 14 days, the occasional storms will continue to keep soil moisture abundant to much of Illinois and Indiana through the middle of next week. Storms will become less organized, of course, though. Next week, we'll have a complete look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather when we talk to Steve Hilberg at the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, have you got Chuck on the road over here for Commodity
He's
Week?
He's rolling right now. He's probably got the radar detector on right now.
Well, don't tell him what he's looking like and what vehicle he's in at the moment in that case.
He's in a Prius right now.
I'm sorry. Oh, man.
Over here in Indiana, we farm with Priuses now, Todd. We're getting into the future now.
Yeah. All right. Well, is he bringing beef over for our coach?
I don't know if he is or not. Yeah, mm-hmm. he didn't tell me. Yeah.
Well, maybe if he's lucky, if Coach is lucky, if Coach Weber is lucky, he'll be getting a little bit.
Yeah, we're trying to get rid of our livestock because Chuck did tell me about this gas tax on beef cattle and dairy cattle, and we just can't afford it. So we're going to probably have to liquidate our herd just because of that.
We'll hear. Speaking of liquidation, I know you were trying to be funny there, but speaking of liquidation, we'll hear a bit later in the program from Mike Hutchins, and I don't think I left this quote in the story, but about liquidation in the dairy herd, and apparently those folks have really been suffering to the tune of about $100 a month loss per head.
I don't know who's had it worse right now between the dairy guys, the poultry guys, and the hog guys when you look at the last 14 or 16 months. I mean, we're talking about ever since the big price rally started and energy prices and input prices went straight up, the cattle, hog, and poultry prices just didn't keep up with the markets. And, I talked to a producer this past week in Ohio, and kind of a telling story because he raises dairy, he milks as well as has hogs. And I said, which do you take on and which do you let go of? And he said, you know, when it comes to the finances, he said, I have no choice but to keep both right now. But if I had a choice and I could retire, I'd definitely be out of hogs right now. And I thought it was very telling because you've lived through 98, and you lived through 2002.
Right.
And you never think those times are going to come by again. Or at least you pray they never come by again. But we're really working towards that again. I hope and pray we don't have to go through that type of liquidation in any of those animal sectors.
Yeah, just for those who don't know or don't recall, 98 and 2002 are really two rough years for the pork industry. Those were the years when, it was 98 when some of the hog producers just gave the hogs, they were giving them away.
They were shooting them, literally shooting them and throwing them in the burn pile instead of paying the money to truck them in for nothing. And
right.
that was about 3 years after I had started brokering, and I felt so great in 1996 and early 1997 with the corn and bean rally, but then 98, the reality of the commodity markets really hit me, and I really wondered deep down whether I could continue because I was doing the livestock analysis for Utterbacks at the time, and we were going out on the road doing seminars, and it was just sickening what guys
right.
were going through at that point.
Well, it's tough, Mike is awfully Mike Hutchins that is awfully in touch with what the dairy industry is up to and has been happening there. And, of course, I thought it was kind of interesting that you said that the producer you were talking to who had both would opt to get out of the hog simply because there is a whole herd dairy buyout if you can get into it. Now, I think that may be up at this point, or that round has been done for the dairy herds. And it's an offer. That's an interesting one. It's an offer by the dairymen. They work together nationally, or they can work together nationally in a group called CWT. And there were, Mike told me, six dairies in the state of Illinois that have been bought out, and I think those herds have been liquidated. He tells me that 100,000 cows have already been liquidated out of the U.S. dairy herd. Another 300,000 need to go still, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on the beef industry, I would think, too. So nobody's immune at this point.
No, not at all. And I think that's where it goes back to a couple months ago when we were getting ready to start the summer, the idea, you know, that some of the news wires and some of the media people were working on in the livestock sector wondered what would the seasonality be. And you know, I think there again, Chuck and I talked about it, and he said, you know, for me as a guy that's raised beef cattle all my life, he said, we've run the genetics towards the very high-quality beef, and so we're really wide open if restaurants don't do well. We're really wide open if the economy's bad, and it's come to pass exactly that, that as the economy has weakened, our cheaper cuts that we import has actually, you know, come, it has stayed the same, if not increased a little bit, whereas the domestically produced beef has really had a tough time, and it's really showed up in our cattle prices.
No, that's an interesting. I'll have to ask him about that for Commodity Week, I think, because I really hadn't thought about, you know, there has been a huge push over decades in all of the livestock sector for better genetics that bring on
the wealthier, so to speak, the wealthier taste and preference category. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's something that people like Wayne Purcell, that's who I kind of learned about everything I know, what little it is. I learned most of it from Wayne Purcell. And, you know, during that time period, you didn't have to really think about that stuff because that was, you know, 25 years ago or 15 years ago. It was just starting to move towards that type of genetic engineering.
Well, yeah, genetic engineering has just happened. Let's be careful of terms we use on occasion. They haven't engineered them exactly, but they have selected sires and cows to make sure they got genetics that they were looking for.
Well, I think what I'm talking about is the carcass, and when you're measuring the carcass and you're looking at the narrowness or the shank, you know, and how you're working different breeds to get to a certain look and a certain size of a certain part of the body.
Right, still done the old-fashioned way.
I don't mean in scientific labs or anything like that. I mean with producers doing that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So let's turn this around and then talk about the other side of it, the feed side. Corn and soybeans. I thought it was interesting. I took a quick look on my screens at the weekly trade for corn and soybeans. And while we have a lot of red on the marketplace today, corn was lower, but beans finished the week higher.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, today's trade, this week's report, and this week's trade as a whole kind of clearly showed the same trend is in place. Wheat is the leader to the downside.
Right.
Beans, especially the old crop beans, are the leader to the upside. Corn is torn between the two, and I think that's what's taken effect here, especially since the report. Yesterday we had one of those days, a very telling day, where the corn and beans shot higher, but the wheat was weaker on the day. And I think if you saw that, you probably were not surprised to see today's price action that we were going to give some of those gains back and all the gains back in terms of the corn market.
Yeah, we gave them all back in the corn market, but let's see. If you're looking at the new crop beans, where are they? Oh, here they are. Well, they were up.
They were up about 15 cents on the week.
Yeah, 14 and three quarters on the week, but they, you know, and they lost half of that today. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, you know, the key now on the weekly charts, because we'll leave the November alone for a second just to make this point, but the weekly charts right now after this week look pretty doggone vulnerable. You're getting some technical sell signals. When I talked to the pits at mid-session, it was right around lunchtime in Chicago that it seemed like the corn really kind of threw in the towel. And the pit manager that I talked to said it looked like that because of the carryover negativity in the wheat market, along with the mediocre gains and the mild gains in the dollar, that had the corn kind of on the negative side all day. But then the new weather updates came out. Not only did they look warm, but they looked warm and wet. And when I called another contact, I said to him, did that do it? And he said that had to have done it for him because he said that warm and wet is jungle. Jungle means you make up your lost growth, you know, that we've had this past month in the central corn belt. And I think that was where the ball rolled. But we are kind of on notice here, Todd, I think, with the weekly charts looking so vulnerable. When you see that the stock market didn't go down, you see that the dollar was contained, the crude oil was only down slightly today, there's a good chance that we can jump back and gain some of these losses back. And I would say you need to at this point because otherwise the negativity could present itself next week if we don't come back right around quickly. The negativity could present itself to the commodity trading funds. They may start wanting to take a net short position in the wheat complex because it is harvest and the dollar looks pretty firm.
Interesting. And you think corn will follow suit and continue to follow it on down on the idea that there's more corn acres out in the West or what happens there?
You know, Chuck came over and he said, what's the number one thing you'd really like to get across on Commodity Week? And I said, the number one thing for me is we still see wheat as the leader. If we're going to get these higher levels in corn of 480 plus in December futures, we're going to need to have the wheat on our side at least or not fighting us at least. And that kind of goes to the acreage numbers. I think it's still worthwhile for producers, even after this kind of a break today, for them to think about coming into the June report how much negativity the trade may want to build into new crop bean prices. I also noticed one interesting thing here. We saw a lot of erosion in basis here in beans, and a lot of that can be traced back to this week. Many of the elevators out there went from July all the way out to November for their bids, even for old crops. So very telling that the commercials are trying to push everything into the new crop, and that just isn't going to be good for our demand side. And I think the export sales showed that as well with the cancellations in China. So my point being, as you get into the end of the month, if you're a producer and you haven't sold a lot of 09 beans, consider letting go some 09 and replacing them with those August bean bull call spreads, because I think that's where you can be there in case the trade gets negative and assumes that 2 or 3 million more acres are coming on the 30th report.
On that note, we'll let you go and take more up with Chuck.
Okay.
Shelby during Commodity Week, okay?
Have a great week.
Thanks much.
Yep,
that's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. His compadre Chuck Shelby will be with us for Commodity Week. And our guest, by the way, will be Dan Bassey this week. So it should be a good program. Jackie Vakes and Kurt Kimmel on that program as well. You can hear it on our website at willag.org. That'll be up there after just about 6 o'clock this evening.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Here are a couple of stories from this week's online edition of the Integrated Pest Management Bulletin from the University of Illinois. EPA revokes all tolerances for carbapurins. The United States Environmental Protection Agency recently revoked all tolerances for carbapurin. This is an insecticide most commonly used across the Corn Belt as Furadan 4F, and recently has gained the interest of some producers as a refuge treatment for corn rootworm control. On occasion, this formulation has also been used as a rescue treatment for corn rootworms. U.S. EPA has concluded that the risk from aggregate exposure from the use of carbapurin does not meet the safety standard of Section 408B2 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. This final ruling becomes effective on the 13th day of August 2009. Although the revocation of tolerances for carbapurin will be effective on the 13th of August, distributors and retailers may continue to sell carbapurin and farmers may use this insecticide, according to the label instructions, until December the 31st of 2009 or this year. Crops treated with carbapurin after January 1st of 2010 cannot enter the marketplace. FMC, of course, intends to challenge the EPA's revocation of tolerances for carbapurin. A bit of caution and post-emergence corn herbicides. The labels of most post-emergence corn herbicides include application restrictions based on a maximum corn size specified as corn height, leaf or collar number, or sometimes both, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager. For product labels that indicate a specific corn height and growth stage, he says be sure to follow the more restrictive of the two. If these restrictions are not followed, he says there can be substantial crop injury that may lead to yield reductions. Adverse environmental conditions as well, such as prolonged periods of cool air temperatures, sometimes result in corn plants that are physiologically older than their height would suggest. He says farmers should be sure to accurately assess plant development stage, i.e. the leaf collar number, in addition to the plant height, before spraying a post-emergence herbicide. You can read these and other news stories from the Illinois Crop Sciences Department at www.ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. That's ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. Sciences and crop production, let's move to the livestock industry, where the high cost of feed and the low cost of milk, that's right, milk, are forcing dairy farmers out of business. I'll have more in a moment. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
A year ago, milk was king, and dairymen were making money hand over fist. Oh, what a difference a year makes. University of Illinois Extension dairy specialist Mike Hutchins says this is the worst economic times the industry has seen in his 30 years of experience.
A very, very difficult time. Probably as bad as I've seen in my 30 plus years here in working with the industry. Milk prices down 40%. Feed prices going up. Corn prices over $4 a bushel. Soybean meal is up. Forage quality quite questionable. And we're losing $100 per cow per month here in Illinois.
The average Illinois dairy farm has 106 cows. That's more than $10,000 a month in equity lost. And it's been happening since February.
We are now in June. The good news was going to be we were going to see a turn the corner here in July. That just keeps pushing back and back. Maybe now a September, October before we see some relief. And there are no prices in the next year and a half that are going to be above break even. And for dairy farmers in Illinois, that's about $16 plus milk. And the best prices you were seeing, the very best, are around $14, $14.50 if this holds.
Hutchins says the industry has imploded on itself in what he calls a perfect storm.
Well, it happened for a couple of reasons. One of those perfect storms. First of all, our economy, as we all know, is in big trouble. So people are buying less dairy products, they're going out to eat less, they're cutting corners. And certainly while we drink a lot of milk, milk consumption is down. Cheese is more of a luxury item. We used to export. Last year, 11% of our dairy products went to the international community. The world's hurting as well. So we're instead of being exporting 11%, maybe 3 or 4% from that aspect over here. And we just have too much milk. And it's supply and demand. Government is buying powder now, and that's a bit of a challenge at this stage of the game. We have more cheese, more butter, more powder in storage right now. And long term, that's going to have to go to some marketplace as well. So there's lots of challenges, and of course, we have to get rid of about 400,000 dairy cows in the United States to try to get supply and demand back in balance.
About 100,000 of those cows have already been liquidated, and it is and will continue to have an impact in other sectors. For instance, the beef cow producers aren't particularly happy that so many extra animals are being harvested. More to come in the future, and it all looks bleak at this point. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's a Friday afternoon, time to check in on the cash grain market, and on the line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is the general manager there, Bruce Bostard. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me very quickly about cash grain situation in your area.
Probably the most interesting thing we have right now is soybeans market. The cash market has switched over to the August or the November on the old crop months. Funds have been buying July beans in a huge way with 7-8 days before first notice. It's making the spreads tremendously volatile, and the cash market effectively have said, if you want to play in that puddle, go ahead. It's going to move out further where there's maybe a little more sanity.
Okay, and we don't have much time, so does that do anything to the farmer or just make your bids further out than they are?
Oh, it looks tremendous at $1.80 over the November. To the farmer, maybe we're going to see a little less volatility. Yesterday, it didn't look good when July was up 40. Today, when the July is down 21 and the November is down 13, it doesn't look nearly as bad to the farmer.
Okay, thanks much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company.
It's National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1768, Samuel Slater was born. An English-American mechanical engineer, Slater is credited with founding the American cotton textile industry. He established the first successful cotton mill in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. In 1822, Peter Henderson was born. A Scottish-American scientist, he is known as the father of American horticulture. He published Gardening for Profit, the first American book devoted entirely to market gardening. Henderson practiced what he wrote. He began a seed business in 1865. In 1900, Fred Waring was born. He provided financial development for improving the electric blender. Waring wanted a machine that could puree raw vegetables for the ulcer diet his doctors prescribed. The Waring blender, originally called the Miracle Mixer, debuted in 1937 and sold for $29.75. By 1954, 1 million Waring blenders had been sold. In 1902, Frank Hardart and Joe Horn opened the first automat at 818 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. It was a combination of fast food vending machines and a cafeteria. The opening is generally considered the birth date of the modern fast food chain. And in 1953, John H. Kraft received a patent for the manufacture of soft surface curd cheese. The patent had a provision discussing how the mold pad could be readily removed from the cheese surface. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. By about 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time, we'll post our weekend look at the commodity markets. It's called Commodity Week. To that website at willag.org. Our guest this week, Dan Bassey of Ag Resource. And we'll have in studio with us Jackie Bakes of the Stuart Peterson Group, Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Chuck Shelby with Risk Management Commodities. It's all at willag.org. And you'll also be able to find this interview with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, belongs to NOAA and the Illinois State Water Survey, and is located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He's on the line with us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's hear about a warmer and on-off wet forecast, moist forecast. What do we want to call it for the next week or so?
Yeah, it's going to be on-off wet. I think it's probably the best thing to describe it. We've got a break today in the weather, but there's still there's an upper level of disturbance that'll be heading in tonight. Could bring us a chance for some rain tonight into early tomorrow. That's currently been is producing showers and thunderstorms over Nebraska, Iowa, and northwestern Missouri, and will be moving southeast. The pattern we have right now, and actually the next few days, well, probably into early next week, Tuesday or so, are actually going to be a bit on the cool side. Normally, temperatures are starting to get into the low 80s for averages this time of year, low to mid 80s, and it doesn't look like we're going to be, at least here in central Illinois, a little bit cooler north, warmer south, and it looks like temperatures will be running a couple of degrees below normal probably over the next 3 to 5 days. There has been for a while a forecast on the long range outlooks of some warmer weather coming in, but this morning's run on the GFS model, which is one of the larger ones, is starting to amplify some northwesterly flow over the Midwest the latter part of next week into the following week, and we're building a ridge out west, which would keep us cool and with occasional systems moving through here giving us some rain. But that's sort of a bigger change from what it was showing yesterday, so that one's sort of we're going to just have to take a wait-and-see attitude on that. But right now, I don't see any huge heat. We should be warming up, but temperatures will actually be warming to normal levels rather than much above.
That sounds like really good crop growing conditions to me.
Yeah, it actually should be pretty good. Hopefully, I haven't checked the numbers this week, but hopefully most everything is in at this point in terms of the soybeans. But I think the little bit of rain, unfortunately, we've had some areas that have gotten flooding rains here the last 2 days, southwestern and southern Illinois, and then up a little band there up in northern Illinois. But hopefully, for the most part, they will continue to be a little bit more widespread and spotty and more of benefit than of any kind of detriment to the crops.
Anything further out that we should be concerned about?
No, I think we're going to have to keep an eye on this pattern. If it, in fact, doesn't develop as forecast, we may actually end up being much warmer than normal toward the latter half of June. But we're just going to have to sort of wait and see how the models sift themselves out.
Thanks much for being with us.
Okay, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hilberg is the director of Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joins us on a Friday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.